Tweet at Today SOR.
It is day two of the four-day summit of Catholic Church leaders being held in the Vatican, where Pope Francis yesterday promised concrete action against priests who abuse children. Pope Francis said that Catholics and victims of abuse were expecting more than simple condemnations and wanted efficient measures, concrete measures, to be put in place. For more on this, I'm joined on the line from Rome by the editor of the Irish Catholic, Michael Kelly, and with me in studio, Gina Menzies, member of the We Are Church Ireland and lecturer in ethics. Thank you both indeed for joining us. Michael Kelly, to you first. What is the emphasis on today?
The emphasis today, Sean, is very much on accountability, because that is one of the key factors why this meeting was called. And one of the participants who we've been hearing from this morning is Cardinal Blaise Cupich from Chicago in the United States. And he was pretty frank with the bishops. He laid it bare and he said the reason why our moral authority is diminished, the reason why people have doubts around our leadership and they no longer trust our leadership, is because we have failed dramatically in the most appalling fashion on an issue that should have been vital to our ministry, should have been vital to the gospel in terms of protecting children. He told the bishops that they need to listen much more to people in the parishes, people in the communities, principally parents. But he also said that what's necessary in the future is that culture of accountability becomes part and parcel of the church, a culture of accountability, if you like, so that not only are allegations of child abuse handled properly when they come forward, but if you have cases where people are shown to have handled them in a way that wasn't consistent with best practice, that wasn't consistent with guidelines, be that not passing on details to the civil authorities, not removing the priest from ministry, things like that, then there has to be accountability for that. And he laid out a roadmap whereby a bishop or a religious superior in those circumstances could effectively be fired, because that's the missing piece of the jigsaw so far around this. And this is what is leaving a lot of people, particularly survivor and victim advocacy groups, angry, because they see that there are still people in leadership positions in the church who have failed in this vital area. So that really was the background to the meeting, and that's very much the tone of the conversation here today.
Gina Menzies, it would be quite an event or turn of events if a bishop started getting fired for mishandling these cases.
Well, I think it's time that happened, and I suppose we would applaud the fact that a cardinal was defrocked, using the correct phrase, in the last week. So I do think Francis has, really begun to understand this. But, when I look at this meeting and I look at, all those rows of clerics without a woman in sight and without a parent or a mother in sight, it makes me just think that the Vatican, the official Catholic Church, is on a catch-up mission. They're catching up with where the rest of us have been for a long, long time. And, I think it's very sad. I applaud what Francis is trying to do. But at the same time, I can understand, it's an interesting, I suppose, image that all the many survivors are outside in Vatican Square with their banners and their
yes, but
requests.
I think there were these videos. I mean, there was some serious catching up done. I mean, they heard, for instance, from an African woman describing being abused from the age of 15 for 13 years by a priest who, she says, forced her to have 3 abortions. Yeah. It doesn't get any more shocking than
no,
that.
No, it doesn't. And, I mean, I'm somebody who did read the Pennsylvania report within the last year. I think, starting with 5 videos of 5 different 5 people from different backgrounds who had been abused in different ways is very good. But by gosh, like, we all, you and I and the rest of the world, certainly the Western world, have known about this for so long. It looks as if it's kind of, finally penetrating the official church at a more serious level.
Now, looking at the list, and they had, I think they were calling them 21 points of reflection, and I think you have them there yourself. And again, they, on the face of it, they look dry, but they do appear maybe to have the potential to lead to some serious action. And I'm just looking at, there's one there which talks about establishing provisions that would facilitate and regulate the participation of lay experts in investigations and in the different degrees of judgment of canonical processes. Now, that's very dry, but it could open the way to something pretty momentous.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I read these and I kind of, when I saw the first one, let's have a practical handbook, I said, oh God, like, is that where we're at? And yes, I agree with you. you when you read through them, that one about experts, but like that was so glaringly obvious for so long that the church was incapable of understanding what was going on and needed to consult, you know, a wider field of experts. So yes, I mean, that is very welcome. It talks about, you know, collaboration. The one that I think is significant, and it's the one where if I had been a pope at the time, I would have begun with it, is number 9. It says increase awareness of the causes and consequences. Now, if this had, if the church had been a civil organisation and this, if you like, issue, crisis had arisen, the first thing you would want to do is excavate behind it, say the why. The why did this happen? What were the causes of it? I mean, again, number 9, it's good. It is a key to understanding it, because I think the church is on catch up. It's saying, how are we going to deal with this now? How are we going to put protocols in place? How are we going to restore the trust of the community? All very good. But if you don't actually get behind and say, why did this happen? You're still going to come short, I think.
Coming back to you, Michael Kelly, in Rome, do you think these 21 points of reflection, are they going to be translated into something like a programme of action then?
I think that's probably what we're going to see in the not too distant future, not from this meeting. The organisers have made it clear that there will be no final document coming from this meeting per se, but the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, that's the body set up to advise Pope Francis on this this wider issue of safeguarding. They're due to hold their plenary session in April, and I would expect concrete recommendations to come from that in April to ensure that the, you know, the policies, the procedures that we have in place in countries like Ireland who have had a long journey in this process to get there, so that those policies and procedures can be adopted in other countries as well. So there is this one church approach, if you like, because Catholicism of its nature is it's universal religion, it's theology, its teaching is universal. So it's incomprehensible for many people why these universal norms can't be right across the church as well. And I think that's what you're going to see coming from this meeting. Just perhaps one point of clarification, just what Gina is saying there are actually women present at the meeting. This is also involving religious superiors of female congregations. So there are a dozen leaders of female religious orders as well participating in the meeting. So it's not just the bishops, it's those who are also responsible for male and female religious orders within the church.
Yeah. What are you expecting, or what do you want to hear, Gina Menzies, from Pope Francis? He's going to speak again, I think, is he, on Sunday?
Well, yes. What we've been led to believe is that on Sunday, what he will deliver is not a homily, but he will deliver something in terms of, you know, policy direction. I accept what, you know, Michael says, that there's a few women around. I mean, that's all very good. But, you know, again, my focus is that, you know, what was the causes? And any other organisation would have gone outside to experts. But the other interesting thing is, I think, you know, the theology, the theological kind of understanding of the church in relation to children, you know, to women, to this whole area of sexuality is deeply flawed. And I'm always utterly fascinated by, when I study theology, that when I looked at the church's social teaching from the end of the 19th century right the way through the 20th century, it changed hugely. I mean, the church really didn't support human rights. The church didn't believe there was salvation. The Catholic Church didn't believe you could be saved outside the Catholic Church. The church really didn't subscribe to our understanding of democracy. So when the church, for the last 100 or so years, has produced social documents in relation, say, for example, the one on the environment recently, they went way outside the church. They did go to the experts in psychology, sociology, philosophy, anthropology. And out of that, they kind of developed really sound, very good Christian gospel-based, if you like, stances on these things. But when it comes to human sexuality and relationships, they're somewhere in the dark ages. They haven't moved at all. They still have a strained view that, you know, women are this and men are that, that gender is given in a certain way that we are. I think the main thing I'm trying to say is that they don't understand that we are sexual beings as well as beings, that sexuality is part of our humanity. I think if you look at the formation of certainly of older priests, and they would tell me very clearly in seminary education that sexuality was almost parked, that it wasn't something that was ever dealt with. So when then they're faced with all these kind of issues and crises, they don't have the competency, they don't have the real part of their humanity, I think, was buried.
Michael, would you comment on that? I mean, is there a need, and do you expect it to happen, that the church will do some sort of catching up then on the way it views human sexuality?
Well, I think there's a deep excavation has to happen as to what were the factors that contributed to this. The sexual abuse of children, obviously, is a deviance which is present in every aspect of society. But I think the deeper question for the church is what led to the culture of cover-up? Why was there this excessive deference to the reputation of clerics, this excessive deference to avoidance of scandal, to the name of the church? Why were they always put ahead of the needs of a child to be protected? So I think there's wider ecclesiological discussion there about the theology that just that underpinned that, that put the church, the institution, first and foremost. Because at a very practical level, and speaking pragmatically, I mean, bishops and cardinals, they sought to protect the church, and in so doing, they brought it to the edge of the cliff. I mean, its moral authority is shot in many corners of the world, quite precisely because of this issue, because of misguided senior clerics trying in their mind to protect the church and avoid scandal.
Okay, Michael Kelly, editor of the Irish Catholic in Rome. Gina Menzies with me in studio, theologian and member of the We Are Church Ireland, lecturer in ethics. Thank you both. It's just after 11, time to go to the newsroom again and to Susan Jackson.